You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
To the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 19th of January, 2023, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshank, streaming at radioalbion.com. It's Thursday, so that means we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
Well, I just got finished reading the San Francisco plan to give black people $5 million if they live in the city limits. So, you know, I guess I've been doing better before. It's a rough read, but this is apparently going to happen.
Wow, that is the first I heard of that. I did hear that the Church of England were giving out slavery reparations, and I guess that must be something similar. But we're not going to be talking about American news today. We are actually. We're going to be talking a little bit about American news. We're going to be talking about Biden in particular. Basically, is Biden being blackmailed? And this is basically concentrating on these documents that were found with him. So we won't be talking about race today, but we will be talking about Joe Biden. And we'll be using an article at globalresearch.ca. Billionaire elites are using their power over the media, the political class and public opinion to coerce Joe Biden into sending US troops to Ukraine to prevent a Russian victory. Idiot conservatives think the media is actually doing their job for once by accurately reporting Biden's alleged transgressions. But the fact is, the media is simply showing that it can switch sides at any time in order to pursue the elitist agenda. No one should be surprised that Joe Biden's classified documents problem has emerged at the same time that a key city in Ukraine, Soledar, has been liberated by Russian troops. All of the recent reports from the front lines indicate that the Russian army is steadily seizing more territory in the eastern part of the country while inflicting heavy casualties on the overmatched Ukrainian forces. In short, the so-called Ukrainian army is being beaten badly, forcing US war planners to rethink their approach. Biden previously rejected the idea of sending troops to Ukraine, acknowledging that it would be tantamount to launching a third world war. But as the classified document scandal gains momentum, the malleable president will likely fall in line and do whatever the hawkish foreign policy establishment demands of him. Just one thing I want to pick up on here before I pass it over there to you, Matt, is Russia taking over this city in Ukraine. On the Russian news, they've been saying this is a very important city. It's a transport hub, and it means that now that they have this, they can move on to this other city. Whereas the Western news, the BBC, have been saying, "Oh, it's not important at all. There's nothing really there. That there's no resources there, and it's just this city that they've been fighting over for no reason, basically." But it does seem as if it's a very important city for various reasons. What are your comments on this, Matt?
Well, despite the fact that it only has, you know, roughly 11,000 people as of 2020, you know, it doesn't mean it's not significant. It shouldn't surprise you that they're going to try to downplay this. It's in Donetsk, of course, and should be a part of it. And they also voted for both independence and then joining Russia. As part of the reason why this has become a priority is to save these people. I was just looking at the 2021 Human Rights Report from the State Department on Ukraine, and they're saying most of what we've been saying for the last few years, especially when it comes to media, fake elections, all this stuff. They try to even it out by talking about Crimea, but the mass killing of civilians in Donetsk, State Department fully admitted this. you know, it's like Victoria Nuland and the biolabs. So I better mention it now before I forget about it. But Soledad, despite being fairly small, is highly strategic because the entire Donetsk region is, you know, is heavy urbanization, industry, mining. It was the industrial hub of Ukraine when it used to be, as of a few years ago. And of course, everyone there is extremely pro-Russian, with a handful of exceptions. So liberating these from what amounts to American occupying force is important, just for the sake of the civilians who remain behind.
And I should imagine they will rebuild anything like they have done in Mariupol. Well, the interesting thing about the Biden side of this is that we will recall all of the media furore that was about Donald Trump keeping documents. And then there was nothing whatsoever that was in the mainstream media about Hunter Biden's laptop. So why are the mainstream media now concentrating on these documents that Joe Biden has? Well, most listeners will recall that Hunter Biden's laptop contained an abundance of information related to the Biden family's vast influence peddling operation. All of this information was deliberately suppressed by the mainstream media in order to pave the way for Biden's victory in the 2020 presidential election. So why, we wonder, has this new scandal become headline news while the laptop story was completely buried? And why are the most hawkish neocons in the Senate, like Lindsey Graham, calling for a special counsel when they made no such effort to reveal the sordid details of the laptop? This is a quote from an article at Zero Hedge. Senator Lindsey Graham, a senior member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, on Wednesday called for Attorney General Merrick Garland to appoint a special counsel to investigate the handling of classified documents by President Biden while he served as vice president. I think if you believe a special counsel is necessary to assure the public about the handling of classified documents by Donald Trump, you should apply a special counsel to the mishandling of classified documents by President Biden when he was vice president. That comes from Senator Graham demands special counsel probe as Biden breaks silence over classified documents over at Zero Hedge. I assure you, if Biden announced the deployment of US combat troops to Ukraine tomorrow, Graham would withdraw his request for a special counsel immediately. This is about Ukraine, not classified documents or potentially unlawful presidential behavior. And whatever you think of Biden, he doesn't want to be the president who starts World War III. Unfortunately, the elites who control the media, the politicians, and most of the nation's wealth are determined to widen the conflict, which is why the narrative in the media has dramatically changed in the last week. Take a listen to this quote from an article at CNN that until now had been promoting the Ukraine is winning meme non-stop for the last 11 months. The situation is critical, difficult. We are holding on to the last, the soldier said. The soldier is from the 46th Air Mobile Brigade, which is leading Ukraine's fight to hold on to Soledar in the face of a massive assault from Russian troops and Wagner mercenaries. The soldier said that he believed Ukraine's military leaders would eventually abandon the fight for Soledar and questioned why they hadn't done this yet. Everyone understands that the city will be abandoned. Everyone understands this, he said. I just want to understand what the point in fighting house to house is. Why die if we are going to leave it anyway today or tomorrow? No one will tell you how many dead and wounded there are, because no one knows for sure, not a single person, he said. Not at the headquarters, not anywhere. Positions are being taken and retaken constantly. What was our house today becomes Wagner's the next day. In Soledar, no one counts the dead, he added. The situation is critical, difficult. We are holding on to the last, the soldier said. And that comes from the situation in eastern Ukrainian town is critical, from CNN. Can you see the difference in the coverage? No more stories about the plucky Ukrainians beating back the ghoulish Russian orcs. No, instead it's the cold, bitter truth. Ukraine is losing and losing hard. But how do we explain this sudden narrative shift? And of course, we did have Ursula von der Leyen inadvertently slipping out the number of Ukrainian dead that there were recently. I forget what the exact number was, but it was a huge number and she had to retract the statement. And there's also been videos that have been put out there showing you all these graves with Ukrainian flags on them. It does seem like there is a massive amount of Ukrainian dead, that and the numbers are just being hidden. And also yesterday we had this helicopter that was shot down by the Ukrainians themselves, which actually shot down the Interior Ministry. And we had Zelensky, who was on the Economic Forum, the World Economic Forum's screen there. And he was asked, does it worry you that you might get taken out in a helicopter like this? And of course, brave Zelensky said, no, of course not. And that's all I'm answering. And then you could see him sort of turn, waiting for the applause from everybody there, applauding him for being so brave. Of course, he's not on the front lines. He wants to dress up like he's on the front lines. And you could see that he was an actor, the way that he paused to get this applause. I mean, the guy is such a fraud. Anyway, I just wanted to bring that up as well there, Matt. But what do you make of what this soldier is saying here? It's what you've been saying for quite some time now, isn't it?
Yeah, from March onward, and I've published firsthand accounts from Ukrainians. Not of course, not the mercenaries, but actual Ukrainians who say the exact same thing. And from, you know, very late February to now, it's been identical. There's no command and control structure. There's the supply lines are so poorly outfitted that not only are they vulnerable, but we're not really getting supplied with much of anything. That they're running low on ammunition. There is no medical staff. There's no vehicles available to clear people out. That also goes for the Donetsk side as well. And of course, refugees make everything 100 times worse. And remember, where most of this fighting is, these are Russian people or Ukrainians who are bilingual, who are generally pro-Russian. There's a few separate dissenters, but they don't really matter politically. So it's all been the same thing. And we've talked about this. We've actually used some of these firsthand quotes in the past. What makes it different now is that the Western media is admitting it. And that's something that's new. So I guess what Whitney's trying to say here is that there's a reason for this. I mean, either they simply can't repress the truth anymore because there's too many people like me out there. But also it may force the regime's hand when it comes to the Biden administration. You know, whether it comes to, you know, Hunter or Joe Biden himself, they've covered everything up, as we all know. And all of a sudden, we have this explosion. And even liberal outlets, which is, you know, the overwhelming majority, certainly don't seem to want this guy for 2024, which should be no surprise. So this is what's happening. So this will be a way. You know, either you're going to end up resigning in disgrace or have your whole personal history besmirched over this, or you're going to listen to us and send ground troops in. And I have the feeling, too, that's where the even the most brainwashed American is going to draw the line, since nothing – the only people that this affects in America, of course, is a handful of elites who are heavily invested over there. The purpose, of course, ultimately is – of course, they know they can't win. That goes for China and Iran too, but at least weaken, you know, their number one and number two geopolitical and economic and financial rival. What isn't mentioned here is the statistics released about the Russian economy, which is booming in many sectors. The not only the budget surplus, but the general account surplus now is being translated into gold in Moscow and Peking. Is tremendous, and it's not pieces of paper like the Americans have. It's actual physical metal, and this is all these things are going on at once. Mainstream presses not only have been admitting these defeats, which they did not admit in the very beginning, but also the fact that the sanctions have only hurt Westerners and badly. So this is why they needed something to prod Joe Biden, and I mean, Whitney's not the only one who's saying this. And I think he's right when he says, well, if Biden were to relent, all of this stuff would be swept under the rug because you only have a handful of media outlets, every one of which is a leftist of one kind or another and covered over the fraudulent election of Biden. Everything is based on deceit. But as I said many years ago, this is priority one for American foreign policy containing Russia or China. And I should also mention something also isn't mentioned. Is that Saudi Arabia is going to be dumping the dollar in its meetings with the Chinese government and the Chinese private sector. So the U.S. is taking hit after hit after hit. And the solution, of course, is more violence, troops on the ground. And that's why you see this sudden interest in Biden's foibles.
Well, it does seem to be what's going on, especially with what they were saying at Davos. There was calls for more sanctions, even though all the sanctions they're doing is hurting Europe. And also all of these world leaders were pledging military hardware and assistance, basically, for Ukraine and saying we're going to keep this war going rather than trying to actually bring it to a peaceful end. Here is former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and former Secretary of Defense Robert Gates making a desperate last-ditch appeal for immediate assistance to prevent the collapse of the Ukrainian forces in the Donbas. When it comes to the war in Ukraine, about the only thing that's certain right now is that the fighting and destruction will continue. Ukraine's military capability and economy are now dependent almost entirely on lifelines from the West, primarily the United States. Under current circumstances, any negotiated ceasefire would leave Russian forces in a strong position to resume their invasion whenever they are ready, and that is unacceptable. The only way to avoid such a scenario is for the United States and its allies to urgently provide Ukraine with a dramatic increase in military supplies and capability sufficient to deter a renewed Russian offensive and to enable Ukraine to push back Russian forces in the east and the south. NATO members also should provide the Ukrainians with longer-range missiles, advanced drones, significant ammunition stocks, including artillery shells, more reconnaissance and surveillance capability, and other equipment. These capabilities are needed in weeks and not months. And that is from Time Is Not on Ukraine's Side, Condoleezza Rice and Robert Gates, WV News. Normally, elder members of the political establishment are more restrained in their pronouncements, but not here. This is pure unabashed desperation. Rice and Gates declare in no uncertain terms that Ukraine is in dire straits. Their economy and infrastructure is in a shambles. Millions have fled the country, and most of the nation's natural wealth is now under Russian control. It's a disaster, and it's a disaster that Gates and Rice want to address by pumping more weapons into a failed state that has zero prospects of winning the war. Does that make any sense? Of course, it doesn't make any sense. And Britain is, of course, is adding to this. One of the most loudest voices in support for Zelensky. We're apparently sending a load of tanks over there. And of course, what are the logistics for that? Do they have the abilities to do repairs to these tanks or anything like that? No, of course they don't. And it's just waste of money and a waste of military hardware. It's just using up all the West's hardware, isn't it? While Russia just sits back and defends itself and does things slowly and with a great deal of measure. Matt, what do you make of what Condoleezza Rice and Secretary of Defense Robert Gates are saying here?
Well, remember, Condoleezza Rice was a Soviet specialist for a long time, but apparently that specialty ended when the Soviet Union ended. With all of these statements, and it is shocking to, these are bona fide regime people talking about, you know, in essence saying that much of what we've been saying in the past isn't true. I don't know why she's so certain that the fighting and destruction will continue. The Ukrainians have, and various sectors have wanted to sue for peace going back to March and April. And the U.S. prevented it. I think the U.K. has a lot to do with that, too. You're right to point out about the advanced military hardware. Right now, you have what would amount to like National Guard or what the British would call territorial army people fighting alongside the mercenaries who are the spearhead against Russian regulars. They don't have the capacity to use what they have. They don't have the fuel for any kind of mobile units. Unless they're manned by Westerners. You mentioned, too, the spare parts, any of the technical abilities and fuel, and even the infrastructure, the road system doesn't exist for this. And they simply don't have the manpower to do it. So this is purely symbolic. Zelensky, there was a party at the U.S. Embassy sponsored by Raytheon and Northrop Grumman. That's not that long ago. It was a couple of months ago. And so clearly they're making out here. But American stocks are, you know, they weren't great to begin with. And believe it or not, they're actually drawing down stocks in Israel, which is a huge shock. Israel has removed its neutrality and is now, of course, in the pro-Ukrainian position. That's how desperate it is. So wars on China and Iran are indefinitely put on hold. And the ability to churn out more of this stuff while still remaining American readiness is going to take a very long time. Yeah, it's a bonanza for them. But what Condoleezza is talking about here is simply impossible. And we've gone on and on about, you know, the American state of the American military in the past. We know that the Pentagon really doesn't know where all this equipment is and where it's going. A lot of this is being sold by, you know, but to third parties. You can see this hardware all over the planet. But no matter what they do, every Ukrainian soldier I've been reading about, in either Ukrainian or Russian, is saying we're running out of ammunition, and they're using whatever they can steal from the Russians. And this has been going on since March. And I'm hoping that because the regime finally is admitting what we've been saying since day one, there'll be increased pressure, not just the elite pressure to get Biden to double down on this, but even pressure from popular groups in America to say this is enough is enough. Europe is being deindustrialized because of this. And a lot of very good men are being killed solely to keep Ukraine essentially a rape victim for corporate America. It is a colony. The mercenaries are doing most of the fighting. And you're right to mention logistics. No one's quite sure how it goes from, you know, a storehouse in Israel up through Turkey, who's, you know, worried about this stuff to begin with, and into the country. Obviously this is all being monitored. It's all being monitored by satellite. Russians know precisely what's coming in and what's going where. But apparently it's not getting to the front line. And even if it did, no one there really knows how to use it. Morale is zero, which is why the Donetsk government is saying everybody we're capturing here is a foreign mercenary, usually from Georgia or the Baltics or Central Asia. This is what the West is relying on now that the best of the Ukrainian army was destroyed months ago.
I think a lot of these weapons are just going off to the organized crime and the black market. And it is very interesting, I think, that Israel, if they're now coming in on the side of Ukraine, because they have remained neutral all this time, despite Zelensky being Jewish. So that is very interesting happening there. I'll have to look some more into that. Well, as we speak, the Ukrainian front lines are crumbling, just as the illusion that wars are determined by the proficiency of one's propaganda services is also crumbling. What's left is the looming prospect that the Russians are essentially on the verge of prevailing in this war's bloodiest and most consequential conflagration. Bakhmut, the eastern transportation hub that will likely be the turning point in the broader campaign. When Bakhmut falls, the Ukrainians will be forced to retreat to their third and fourth lines of defence, pushing the war closer and closer towards the Dnieper and then onwards to Kiev. The checkered flag is gradually coming into sight. This is an excerpt from an interview with General Valery Zaluzhny, who is the commander-in-chief of the armed forces of Ukraine. Russian mobilization has worked, says General Zaluzhny. The enemy shouldn't be discounted. They are not weak, and they have great potential in terms of manpower. Mobilization has also allowed Russia to rotate its forces on and off the front lines more frequently, he says, allowing them to rest and recuperate. In this regard, they have an advantage. Therefore, everything really depends on the amount of supplies, and this determines the success of the battle in many cases. General Zaluzhny, who is raising a new army corps, reels off a wish list. I know that I can beat this enemy, he says, but I need resources. I need 300 tanks, 600 to 700 infantry fighting vehicles, 500 howitzers. The incremental arsenal he is seeking is bigger than the total armed forces of most European armies. In private, however, Ukrainian and Western officials admit that there may be other outcomes. We can and should take a lot more territory, General Zaluzhny insists, but he obliquely acknowledges the possibility that Russian advances might prove stronger than expected, or Ukrainian ones weaker. It seems to me we are on the edge, warns General Zaluzhny. I have no doubt they will have another go at Kiev. Children start freezing, he says. What kind of mood will the fighters be in? Without water, light and heat, can we talk about preparing reserves to keep fighting? And that's from Volodymyr Zelensky and his generals explain why the war hangs in the balance, from The Economist. Washington's war on Russia has transformed the country into an uninhabitable wasteland, supported entirely by foreign charity in exchange for a resolute commitment to the globalist agenda. In truth, I stand with Ukraine means I support the summary obliteration of a thriving civilization so that Washington can achieve its pernicious ambitions. And they seem to be talking here about, well, obviously this is Volodymyr Zelensky's generals talking about the Russians are going to have another go at Kiev. The Russians haven't even had a go at Kiev yet. They haven't made an attempt on Kiev. All they've done is secured the areas with the Russian speakers. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? I have no doubt they'll have another go at Kiev, as if they bravely managed to defeat the Russian forces that just, we talked about it, didn't we, Matt? They just ended up hanging around outside Kiev to prevent reserves from going from Kiev down into the south to aid the Ukrainians that were down there. And that was in the first 3 or 4 weeks of the war. And we were told, oh, they're running out of petrol. They've got flat tires. That's why they're not moving. And all they were doing was preventing the Ukrainians from getting down into the south. The Russians haven't even made a first attempt at Kiev, let alone a second one. What do you make of what General Zelensky has to say here, Matt?
Well, we've spoken about him in the past, not that long ago. He's incredibly young to be made into a general. His promotions were so rapid that they're very suspicious. And it shouldn't surprise anybody that this man was trained in the Western style. And he's young enough not to have had the Soviet influence that others have had in terms of military strategy. You're right about Kiev. There was, I think, about 30,000 men that stopped, you know, miles away, actually including Belarusians, as a diversionary measure. You can't invade Kiev with 40,000 men or 30,000 men. They weren't even equipped for that. That meant that the Ukrainians had to cut their army in half, because the problem was a buildup on the border of Donetsk and Luhansk, which the U.S. created. By pretending that they're moving south from Belarus to Kiev, it meant that they had to dedicate a huge number of men there. Reserves are completely exhausted already. I mean, the notion that Ukraine is dependent solely on the West, you go to the Wayback Machine and see my old website where I said the exact same thing 15 years ago. This is nothing new. Deindustrialization and the hollowing out of what could be a top-notch first world economy, which is, you know, anathema to the West. And the fact that Ukrainians blame the West for what happened in the 1990s and early 2000s, where the country was simply flattened. So this is, you know, it's the old joke where, you could explode an atomic bomb over Western Ukraine and cause $1 million in damage. You know, this is, it doesn't have to be that way. But it is that way. And, we talked, I think it was last week or 2 weeks ago, that BlackRock is going to be – is already moving in there. Zelensky is now an employee in a sense of the BlackRock organization. And they're going to be filtering all of this stuff, all the aid money, the loans that they know they'll never see again. This is all – and BlackRock is going to take a cut of it. Even more, any reconstruction money coming from the West, I don't know where all this money is coming from, but – will has to be filtered through there, even if it's just a private sector. So they're going to take a cut of every aspect of the rebuilding of the economy, regardless of who wins. There's the old military adage that you can't simultaneously minimize civilian casualties, minimize your own casualties, and maximize the casualties of your opponent at the same time. You have to sacrifice one of them, because they are trying to do all three at the same time is simply impossible. The Russian strategy has been to minimize civilian casualties and minimize their own, which means that they could have done even more damage to the Ukrainians had they taken a different tack. I have the feeling that that's changed now, and the mobilization is proof of that. If they focus on destroying these ragtag remains of Ukrainian army and even the mercenaries, it's going to be over in a very short time. Who's doing the fighting is a big issue here, because these, you know, mostly are not Ukrainian regulars. They're, reservists. They're usually much older or much younger and have very perfunctory training. I don't know what this new army corps that he's talking about. I don't know where this is, where the men are coming from. But the very act of getting things from the Polish border to the front is absolutely – it's impossible. And you're right. These things are going to organized crime. They're going on black markets. And you're going to see, you know, cartels and criminal groups very, very well armed in the future with the best American equipment. But 300 tanks, this is – you know, they don't have the men for this. They don't have the material for this. They don't have the ammunition for this. They don't have the fuel for this. All these people are doing is trying to keep the spigot on, and it's got to be a point where they simply can't send any more objects. They can't send any more material, and you know that this again is why the pressure on Biden with these classified documents.
Well, it certainly seems like he is being pushed into war. The regime never expected that the most comprehensive economic sanctions ever levied on a country would backfire and only hurt our closest allies in Europe. They never expected that those same sanctions would serve to enrich Russia and strengthen its ties with countries that are strategic rivals of the United States. They never expected that China and India would thumb their noses at US sanctions and take full advantage of Russia's cheap gas and oil to grow their economies, leaving Europe to languish in a permanent slump brought on by their irrational attachment to the United States. For people who have followed events in Ukraine closely, much of what we are saying here will seem obvious. For those who believe the media's reports, well, we think they are going to be very surprised by upcoming events. The outcome of combined arms ground wars is not decided by the fiction writers at the New York Times. The war in Ukraine is going to end in favor of the side that is the most powerful. That much is certain. Take a look at this brief summary by combat veteran U.S. Lieutenant Colonel Alex Vershinin, who worked as a modeling and simulations officer in NATO and U.S. Army concept development and experimentation. And he says, "Wars of attrition are won through careful husbandry of one's own resources while destroying the enemy's. Russia entered the war with vast material superiority and a greater industrial base to sustain and replace losses. They have carefully preserved their resources, withdrawing every time the tactical situation turned against them. Ukraine started the war with a smaller resource pool and relied on the Western coalition to sustain its war effort. This dependency pressured Ukraine into a series of tactically successful offensives, which consumed strategic resources that Ukraine will struggle to replace in full, in my view. The real question is not whether Ukraine can regain all its territory, but whether it can inflict sufficient losses on Russian mobilized reservists to undermine Russia's domestic unity, forcing it to the negotiation table on Ukrainian terms. Or will Russian attrition strategy work to annex an even larger portion of Ukraine?" And that is from What is Ahead in the War in Ukraine by Alex Vershinin from Russia Matters. The point we are trying to make is simple. Putin has now assembled the army he needs to finish the job through military force. In fact, his army is already making significant headway in the east, where a key city was liberated on Tuesday, Soledar. We expect that these regional victories will continue throughout the winter and into the spring. In other words, we are fast approaching the moment of truth that many had anticipated from the very beginning, a direct clash between the United States and Russia. This is the war the fanatical neocons want, and this is why they are using the classified documents to coerce Biden's support. It is blackmail. Matt, what are your final thoughts on all of this today?
Well, as of today, and I think this started probably in early summer last year, the American assistance for Ukraine is at a crisis point in terms of diminishing returns. The same inputs that were given in March, for example, or even earlier, don't give the same results as they did early on. And that's because of everything that we've been talking about. Ukraine doesn't have an economy. To think that Russia, who is the seventh largest economy in the world and is growing, would have any difficulty with Ukraine as what was a third world state artificially is ridiculous. Anything of value, especially in the eastern half of Ukraine, was built by Russians and even possibly Chinese. Everything of value there derives and dependency, not just on oil. I mean, oil is strategic, but there's a million other things in the industrial world that the Ukraine, because it was done on the Soviet model. Switching that over is going to require a massive amount of investment. The point of the BlackRock thing is to switch the what's left of the country over purely to American models of industry and everything else, bringing in foreigners. The population loss is a disaster. But when you have diminishing returns to this point, where the same inputs as of a year ago are doing nothing, in fact, maybe even going to the negative because they're leaving the country, that's when you're going to start seeing a diminution. I think Putin underestimated just the level of fanaticism in Washington, D.C., the propaganda, the PR, the cringy PR stunts that Zelensky's done, as you mentioned one. I think he underestimated that. So now the strategy has changed, and who knows? He may end up at least surrounding Kiev and forcing Ukraine to the U.S. to the negotiating table. In the meantime, this needless war is just going to continue.
Well, I just hope that it's over as quickly as possible. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.